coincident EM or neutrino signal with a gravitational wave. I think that's a big deal. I think it is one of the strong science drivers, and it ties into a broader community, and I'll say something about that. So look, I think if you take all this together, where we stand right now, we stand at the sort of the precipice of a very large opportunity, and that's third generation detectors. And I think the case is strong now. We know the science exists, and I think it's urgent. And some people may ask, why is it urgent? And the answer comes from looking at the history of gravitational wave detector development, at least in the U.S. So initial LIGO really got started. You know, these dates come from a historical record that Ray and Kip put together. In 1983, Caltech and MIT jointly present a study that was done for developing a kilometer-class detector that eventually became the LIGO Observatory, the LIGO initial LIGO detector. It receives endorsement by NSF. All right, fast forward 7 years, the NSB, it took 7 years to get it through the National Science Board. And fast forward 4 years, site construction begins. Fast forward 8 years, detectors are operating. Fast forward 4 years, design sensitivity. That's 23 years. Advanced LIGO, same sort of story. Took a little bit less time, 16 years. But the point being, and with that 16 years, by the way, we had an observatory. We didn't have to build an observatory. We just had to build a detecting observatory. So the takeaway point here is that the gestation period for gravitational wave observatories may be about 20 years. For detectors, it may be 15. Now, maybe that speeds up because we know a lot more now than we did, 20, 30 years ago. But I think the point is that if we want new facilities, new 10-kilometer, 20-kilometer, 40-kilometer class facilities in 2030, we've got to be starting now. All right, so what are the paths to future detectors? And I think there's two ideas that are out there, and I think they're both valid ideas, and I don't think it's one versus the other. There's the short-term path, which is what can we do to basically exploit the limits of the facility that we have at LIGO. Basically, it's the vacuum system and the low frequency, some of the low frequency constraints there at the LIGO Hanford and Lennox Observatories, and that's, we call that Voyager. And you heard about that yesterday. Then there's Cosmic Explorer. Now, we don't know how much either of them are going to cost, but generally speaking, there's probably an order of magnitude more cost for doing something big like Cosmic Explorer, because you're looking at a new observatory, land acquisition, building, if you go underground, building tunnels, things like that. One caveat with the Voyager that I just put out there, that everybody worries about the fact that we need new detectors, we need silicon and things like that. Well, we also need to make our vacuum system work, keep working. And the facility, the observatories now are actually getting old. They're about 20, 22 years old now, I think, or maybe 20 years old. All right, and the vacuum system is starting to show signs of age. There are leaks and things like that. So we're going to have to work on fixing, and that's something that's a priority for us. So there may be some refurbishment issues that we have to deal with there. New kilometer class, Cosmic Explorer class observatory probably can't go at Hanford or Livingston just because of constraints. You can't put a 40-kilometer arm length or even a 10-kilometer arm length there. It's very unlikely. And they're not the greatest sites in the world. Now that we've run LIGO for 15 years, we know that we know a lot more about how seismic noise couples, how environmental noise couples. So we might pick something else. All right, and I'll point out, and I was talking with Fred Robb about this, that land acquisition issues, even you think about the United States being a very big place, there's got to be lots of places that we could put 40-kilometer L-shaped interferometers or 20-kilometer triangular interferometers. And it turns out that and if you want to be anywhere near a major civilization, so you don't have to drive 5 hours to get to the observatory, you might have a problem. So you might actually end up wanting to go underground. There may be scientific reasons for that too. And I'll point out here that I want to tie this all together by saying the following, that when you're building a new kilometer class or 110 kilometer class, 20 kilometer class detector, you still want to be running the old observatories, and the astronomers know how to do this. You know, they build new telescopes using their old telescopes. So I think we want to also get into this mindset that it's not either or, that we're going to be doing observing even while we're building these new detectors. All right, so what are some considerations? All right, and I think one of the considerations is fundamentally somewhat of cooperation. Okay, so let me just give you some, again, historical context. The first generation gravitational wave detectors were built independently. In other words, the United States decided to do LIGO. Caltech and MIT banded together, put a proposal in, pitched it. The LSC was born out of that, and Michelin LIGO came in. The French and Italian consortium did the same thing. They built Virgo independently. GEO was also built independently, UK, German consortium. Right, in some sense, when this happened, we were competitors. In other words, you know, Virgo thought they might be able to detect pulsars before LIGO did. LIGO thought they might be able to detect binary black holes or binary neutron stars before Virgo did. All right, but we weren't cooperating. But it was realized that that actually wasn't a good model because networks matter and cooperation matter. So second generation gravitational wave detectors had elements of cooperation. And the best example of that is the contributions by the AEI, the lasers, by the UK, the suspension systems, and by Australia on some of the output optics. So cooperation ended up making a detector called Advanced LIGO, and obviously it worked. All right. And the other thing that we realized is that we needed to share data. So we did this joint MOU with Virgo, where we completely share our data, and the scientific product from our detectors is shared. It's everybody's, LIGO's and Virgo's. All right. So now let's take that lesson and fast forward. So I think you see the path, the evolutionary path here, and the evolutionary path is cooperation actually, I think, makes for better science. So since we're going to go big, all right, I think we need to think about how we would coordinate and do something like Advanced LIGO for a third generation detector. All right. And there are advantages to that, but there are also disadvantages, and I want to point them both out. So the advantage of coordination is, in some sense, homogeneity of design. So one group builds the laser, and that laser is used for all of the observatories. Another group does squeezing, and that's used for all the observatories. So there are places where you can use economies of scale. All right. There's coordinated site selection. In the initial detectors, you know, LIGO picked their sites, Virgo picked their site, GEO picked their site. For a third generation detector where we want to be cooperating, we have the luxury of trying to coordinate that amongst all the major collaborations, all right? And it also makes the best use of what I call distributed expertise. There's expertise in all the collaborations and in all the projects. For example, CAGRA, knows how to do underground detectors. They're pushing cryogenics, and that's something that's probably going to be useful in third generation. So you can use that distributed knowledge to come up with designs that you can cross share. Now, I think there are challenges in coordination, and you need management. It depends on the level of coordination that you look toward, but you need robust management structures. Right. I think Advanced LIGO was a good example of that. We had a very robust management structure led by David Shoemaker, where decisions were made quickly. If there were problems and things like that, it worked quite well. There's also system engineering, status, interface control, quality assurance. These are all things that you don't think about when you're thinking about the science of a detector. But if you're building one, you've got to worry about it. So I from my standpoint, cooperation has a lot of advantages, but I think you have to understand what these challenges are and have come up with structures that respect, some of those challenges and work through them. I think the major challenge is going to be coordination of the different projects. So yesterday we had a discussion, which I thought was quite informative, at least for me, that different projects. Advanced LIGAR has a plan for upgrading, and then we're thinking about Voyager. ET is coming along in Europe. Not clear yet what's happening in Japan. So there's some different timing and synchronization issues that have to be thought about here. I don't think those are insurmountable, though. That's fine. What's needed to fund a detector? Well, I think there are a bunch of what I would call essentials and really importance. All right. If I'm a U.S. taxpayer or a
European taxpayer, all right? And I'm going to watch my government put $1 billion into this. What would I ask for as an educated taxpayer? I think the first is that, at least in the U.S., I think advanced LIGO has to meet its design sensitivity. I'm confident it will at some point, in maybe 2019 or 2020, but I think it will, all right? The science case for the 3D detectors must be extremely well developed, given what we know when we put in a proposal. And this is something that's very iterative. I mean, the more we observe these gravitational wave events in different types, the more we'll refine that science case. But it's going to be a continual refinement until the point at which you have to actually push a button and submit the proposal. And I think this is critical. All right, and I'm not sure we yet have the perfect science case for 3G detector. I think the elements are out there. We have to prepare the funding agencies. We've had discussions here about how NSF might think about doing a big detector. That has to happen in Europe. I guess ET is sort of going on there, and if there's something else going on, maybe there'll be a third generation detector in South America, perhaps China. Those discussions have to start taking place, and I think they have to start taking place in a coordinated manner. All right, and I think one of the things that's essential, I think Ray is going to talk about this a little bit more, is having some external blue ribbon panel look at this and say, okay, this is for real. I mean, we as a community, I think, know what we want to do, but I think there for large instruments, you have to actually get somebody else who's not a member or insider of that community to say, yes, they have their science case down, they know what they want to do, they have a good design, they can go forward and do it. International coordination and planning, we've already talked about that. And I think the other thing that's very important here is support and advocacy from an outside community. I mean, we here represent some fraction of the gravitation wave community, which by my count represents about 1,500 people if you integrate over all the collaborations, all right? All right, but there's a larger community of astronomers who are very interested in what we do, all right, because it adds to their science, the transient astronomy. And even nuclear physicists, if we can study equations of state, in binary neutron star collisions, that might be interesting. So getting them on board and having them say, look, doing something like Cosmic Explorer ET is really important for our science, too. That's going to help quite a bit. All right, and I think this is my last slide. So what's the near-term need? If you believe what I said, or at least contemplate what I said, there are natural things that come out of it. First is coordinated R&D, all right? Because there's lots of elements to any detector, ET, Cosmic Explorer, and we've talked about a number of them here, cryogenics, Newtonian noise, coatings, things like that. Right now, we don't really intercollaborate. In other words, the LSC has its own working groups. CAGRA has its own groups, Virgo, but we don't actually coordinate it. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday. I think there needs to be something more along the lines of having coordination. And I think it's basically a common program, all right, in which resources are allocated and managed efficiently. All right. And the white paper that the LSC does is probably the best example that I know of that. So. There might be a distinction between research and development in this model, in the sense that I think the research, it's obvious that research should be coordinated. Anybody that does anything that makes better coatings, every project is going to use that. Should the development be coordinated? In other words, should we all decide to use the exact same suspension structure in Cosmic Explorer and ET? That part I'm not completely convinced of yet, but I think there are arguments for and against it. And then finally, I think it's important to understand that GWIC, this, the Gravitational Wave International Committee, and Sheila is the chair of right now, is an over sort of a panel that's designed to coordinate the science of GW detectors, and in particular the ground-based detectors. And I think it has a role to play, and there's going to be a discussion on Sunday in New York City about what that role is. And then also, what are the roles of GWAC, the agency? So we've got GWIC and we've got GWAC, and I think they both can play an important role here. I think how that role evolves depends on what comes out of the discussions that we're having here and the discussions that we'll be having over the next year or so. But I think it's important to realize that I don't think we can be having the same discussion now, next year, because if we are, then we're late. And I'll stop there.
Thank you, Dave. Ray, why don't you speak and we can have a discussion period on presentations before we go to the audience. Thank you.
Yeah, You're going to do the honors, or should I? Which one of these things I use this to the pass?
That should work.
Okay, good. I'm going to really do very much what Dave just did, except I want to take one specific piece of it, which is the business of how do you actually get a big project going in this country, which some of us really have some experience. It wasn't the easiest experience, but I wanted to explain to you what's necessary. And that's really, I've given this talk in some version at the Hyannis meeting this weekend. And it's not brand new, but there's some new things in it. And so where I'm leading, so you know at the end, is I'm going to recommend that we actually very critically push the idea that there be a, what you call the blue ribbon panel. I want a very special blue ribbon panel that has the imprimatur of some large agencies of advisory systems within our own country. I'll explain that better. So that we need to, in fact, develop the case. And this is the case that I think is part of it. I also want to demonstrate in my little talk to you why you have to go through a lot of stages to do this. So first of all, what's on the screen is sort of obvious. What it is if you have a program, and this is a program we're going to have, where you have, this is now, and a little bit into the future, we're going to have a strong observing program. And the interesting thing is, you have to learn what that, or really try to explain that observing program to people. I mean, not only are we going to be looking at things we already know, hopefully we will find things that are not known, and that would be quite a disappointment if we don't find things that are brand new. Because that's been the history of this field of astrophysics. Every time you open any window, we've said this for probably 30 years, that has to happen. If it doesn't, it's really quite surprising. And it would be really surprising in this case because it's a completely different channel. I mean, it's just from a different corner. So we're also going to probably, if we're lucky, and I think we will, be explaining things that people already know about in a different way. A good example would be a supernova. I mean, if we ever see a supernova, not that that's something we can plan on, but it's an interesting thing. We will see something other people have seen for years, but we'll know a hell of a lot more about it than has ever been known before, because we can look inside of it. And so that's knowing the end. Well, the other thing is the business of putting what we have discovered in the context of the rest of astronomy is very important. That's what we were just discussing yesterday. So all of these things, I hope, will be part of the program that you would be describing to some committee. Okay? Now, the part that's not understood is the next one, the strong technical development program. And I'll tell you, it's understood by some of us here, but not by everybody I talk to. And that's a very important point, and I want to dwell on that a little bit. When I talk to astronomers, and I've given an awful lot of talks lately because of all this notoriety, what happens is you tell them a little about our future. And you tell them, well, you know, we're eventually going to do cosmology, we're going to do it. And they don't understand the following thing. They build a telescope, and then they use the telescope for 25 years. And there's always interesting things to do. What in hell do you need to keep improving the detector? And that's quite central, and they don't understand it. And the thing is, it's very different than optical or radio astronomy. What we're doing is always at the threat of the technology. It cannot avoid it, because we're not limited by a background. That's what you have to think about. See, cosmic background studies eventually got limited. Look, the whole bicep thing got messed up by a background. I mean, and all the fields eventually get to a point where they have large enough apertures. You do have to worry about the things that are in the foregrounds in deep ways. We're not at that stage, and I don't expect us to be at that stage until way, way in the future. So every time we improve the sensitivity, we see new things. But we always, and here's how, just think of it. The thing we tell people is, look, we measure, the other thing people don't understand is that we measure the amplitude. That's something typical astronomers do not know. They say, well, you're only gained with one, you know, one over R squared, what the hell are you talking about?
Radio astronomers.
What?
Radio astronomers.
Well, radio astronomers don't do it. They do it a little, but most of them look at intensities. Let's be honest about it. Yeah, I mean, when you do what you do, plus you do a radiometry with the detectors. So, no, they understand it closest. Of all the astronomers, they know closest to it. But we're looking at the amplitude that gets us things like the following. Then you get this cube law for the rate, for example. That's where that comes from. Now, for the rate of bursts. But wait a minute, don't stop there. Look what other sources we're looking for. We're looking at, for example, look for CW sources. You gain with the square root of the time on that, at the best. You gain linearly with the sensitivity and maybe with a sharp cutoff, because we don't know where they begin to radiate. So it could be a step function plus something that goes linearly in the sensitivity. And it's worst of all for the cosmic backgrounds, those background things, because there you only gain, I'm talking about H, you only gain with a quarter power of the time. because you're looking at noises in two sources, the two detectors, and then you have the cross car. You gain only with the time to the one quarter power. So every time you increase the sensitivity, you gain drastically better than just observing. So that's not understood by people. We have to develop a good argument for that, because we're going to be expensive because of that. Okay? So that's in any projections, any kind of things you do to a committee, which I'm going to be recommending you. You've got to figure out how to highlight this. I may not have done it well, but you've got to develop that argument. It's not understood by people on the outside. So the last thing is you have to have a strong analysis program. Well, that's obvious. You can't let this thing go. I took an example here of what we now know. And it's an example I couldn't have made a year ago. To take our discovery and you say, okay, here, you say, let's take black holes and then development. And what is it where the technology will eventually, it's already every stage, the technology will have something to say about it. There's going to be a point, a break point, where you need new facilities. You need something new. And where's that going to happen? Well, whoops, I'm sorry. God damn it. Okay, well, it's going to happen. I mean, clearly we're going to be doing this in the beginning, and that's going to happen soon. We're going to start doing, what astronomy does. We hope to even be able to do spins, maybe with the sensitivity we have. And if we ever do get an E&M cross-correlation, we might get the idea of the astrophysical setting. That's sort of near term. And then what are the topics that are going to be interesting to us and interesting to other people is the origins of these black holes. That's already become quite speculative. I mean, a paper coming out the day that we published it on that maybe black holes are the dark matter. It's pretty crazy. I mean, it's a crappy paper, but never mind. to start that sort of stuff. But anyway, so now we think, well, we have these were all described. Now we hope it comes from possibly from the collapse of ordinary stars. Maybe it's the product of the first stars. That's a very interesting question. Maybe these enormous monster stars that are, all hydrogen, that they have no heavies in them at all. They get bigger and bigger and bigger and fatter, and then they collapse. That's probably how you get big black holes. At least people might get them that way. But in order to prove that, you're getting already into tricky regions. You have to get out there. The Z's of 4, 5, 6, maybe. Okay? So you're getting that. You may not be able to do that with what we have. And then, you certainly could get at dynamical formation. You have globular clusters and nearer things. But if you want to talk about primordial ones, like those guys who have published that paper, you're not going to get near that. So you want to look ahead. When in Z would you have things? So this is beginning to get quite delicate. Now, okay, get precision tests of general relativity. That's certainly something we're going to be doing. But I bet you we're going to find that signal noise is absolutely critical to that. I mean, to get at a precision test. And now, when you get to this thing, which is what we're trying to sell, for example, for a new facility, you obviously have to be in. Now you're saying you use this new tool you have as a thing to actually measure what's going on in the universe. These are some ideas, they're not original. I mean, yes, H and W clearly is something that you might try to go after. I've talked to astronomers about that, and that relates to what I'm going to tell you at the end. We don't yet have together a good science case for all of that. In fact, that's probably one of the most critical things that has to come out of this group if we're going to argue that cosmology is the big thing to do. We're going to have to look carefully at how well you would do with H and W, okay, if you use this as a method of doing the maturation of the measurement. We haven't done that work, and it's very competitive, and people in the astronomy community will tell you, we can have 5 ways to look at H when we get the LSST, and you will do it much better than you'll ever be doing it, but they refuse to think that maybe we have a different systematic problem. So that's the thing you have to drive. Okay, look, I'm not telling you things you don't know, but you have to organize this all in such a way that you can make a compelling case. So anyway, these are the problems that you could already anticipate that will come from what we've discovered. Okay, so now let's look at the things that are going to happen, and I will leave you with some strategic thinking about this. Well, I'm a little disappointed in what I heard about the time scale for the A+. I hate to tell you that. When I made that slide, I didn't put 10 there, I put 5. Okay? You can't do it. So in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to be typically operating LIGO at some number, but I made these numbers up. They're not made in any way exact. 40 million going to a laboratory for operations probably a year, maybe 10 million per year going into the LSC for different things that go on. And new detectors, we already now know that the way even A+ is going to be of the order of 30 million. But if you talk about the thing that follows that, the Voyager, it easy could go up to this. Doesn't have to, but it could. You're talking about big money, but it isn't as big as what you're talking about for the thing that follows. And that's the critical thing. And now there are two critical things. Dave already mentioned it. I worry about that a lot since I'm deeply involved in it, or was before I got swallowed in this business with all these awards. Is this, what about our facility? And maybe our 25-year facilities, we're getting way past that by this time. You got to put money into it. Maybe, and you want to worry, is it really worth it? That's a big, not, clearly now it's worth it, but at that time, when you get that far down the line, this lifetime issue is going to be a big issue. And so people are talking, and a lot of people, especially Matt and Nurgis, and people have been thinking now of this really wonderful idea of making the thing long. And also in Europe and putting in a tie. But you're not talking a triangle barrier, longer also. But you're talking, there is no real budget for any of those things yet. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I can't imagine it being less than $1 billion. So you're talking very big fun. And that means you gotta really deal with the whole process of defending it and trying to get something behind you. And that's what my talk is really about. So what is the science problem? And that's the remainder of my talk. And many of you have not been through this, so I think this is worth listening to. So what it is this. You first of all have to find out and think critically who's interested in what you're selling. And well, if it's astronomy, what kind of things are interesting those people? Populations, evolution of structures, evolution of stars, evolution of the structures, specific systems. I mean by that supernova or other things that we might discover. I hope we'll discover things that make this real. And then cosmology. Astronomers are very interested in cosmology. That's a wonderful intersection point with physics. Physics is also very interested in cosmology because it talks about theories of gravity. So it turns out that's the intersection, really. Maybe even in supernova, but these two are the intersection with physics. So if physics is what you're trying to push for to get interest in it, you're talking about strong field tests of general relativity and understandable systems. I think that's one of the big things that is sort of a discovery. The black holes, as much as people didn't believe in them, happen to be pristine, simple systems. Imagine that. Man, Phil Morrison will be turning over his grave at this moment. Pretty high level. What? Then the gravitation on large scales comes into it. That's really through the cosmology, the consistency of the cosmological solutions. That's a very important problem. And then nuclear physics has things in it, as we have discussed already, the equation of state, our process, people now even thinking of getting heavy elements only from black hole collisions, which is sort of spectacular. I can't believe that, but let's, and then supernova and wave kinematics. Okay, so these are, at least, there are probably many more that you can think of. So these are the two constituencies that you have to talk to. You have to decide, maybe you don't have to decide which one, you talk to both of them, obviously. But now it says, which one of these groups, which are very important to you, will say that all the other things that they're doing and thinking about is worth $1 billion against all the other priorities that they have. That's the fundamental problem you're going to be up against. I probably won't be around for that, but you will, and you're going to have to fight this battle. So, so here are the strategies. First of all, and this is what was already mentioned by David, but I want to really drive it home. You need a reputable scientific group, not only from us. This is why the Dawn meeting is talking to ourselves. It's a very good idea. We have to do it. We have to get ourselves together, but it's not the way to sell this project. It won't work. I'm telling you that to everyone. It's not the single thing you can do. You can't just have group meetings and then write a newspaper article about it. That's not the way it's going to work. You have to do something else. So if it's astronomy that you're trying to seduce, you're going to have to get into this business of the decadal studies. That's one of the ways that organized, many of you have been involved with those, many of others of you have not. It's the way that the astronomy community over the years has managed to have all their internal battles internally. They're hidden, you think. And so their end runs around the Congress and other things like that, but never mind. What happens is that this is now a group which discusses all the priorities and outcomes of beautiful book with beautiful pictures and says wonderful things about the different projects that they advocate. And my God, you'd love to be part of a thing like that. You have to be in some way. Well, I recommend you don't get mixed up with that. And others do the same. Why? Already now in our business, the CMB, the Pulsar, this is the Pulsar the polarization. The pulsar timing and the space-based are in the debate. And they made recommendations. They're already there. And ground-based, if this was not in it, ground-based was not in the 2010 debate, was mentioned. And now guaranteed it'll be mentioned in the 2020, because it's very important that there has been a discovery. But I strongly recommend that you don't get mixed up with it. And why? Because they're already competing with many, many large projects. Mind, by the way, a lot of them beneficiaries of the thing that we did to get LIGO going. The MREFC thing. If you look at the history of that, you'll see that LIGO wasn't the very, very first. It was Gemini, which got a little bit, but then LIGO got two big bumps up. But then did a lot of South-South Pole millimeter waves, the South-South Pole, other astronomy projects, the NEON project. NSF got a tremendous benefit out of the fact that they were able, finally, to get a line item in the budget for a large project. That was something that we helped a lot to do and lobbied in Congress. Okay? And so that's what then happened. And astronomy is already having trouble now supporting all those facilities that were built by the MREFC thing. Why? Because they can't shut down facilities. They don't know how to do it. It's one of the big problems. The Congress gets mixed up. It's just like shutting down military bases. They can't do it so easily. So if it's physics that you really want to push, and clearly you want to do both, there are no longer any of the Cato studies. The last one I remember is the Brinkman study, which actually recommended back in the 80s. I recommended LIGO as a big project in gravity. That's the last time I ever saw a physics community together to recommend it. Okay? Maybe, and it's not in the high energy community, as you'll hear in a minute, it has HEPAP, and they do their internal fighting internal to that community. And then they put out a unified, united front for the prioritization. So, and this is an idea not from me, it comes from Barry Barish. We talked about this maybe a year and a half ago. What we need is an NRC panel. What is that? It's a panel that's put together by the National Academy of Science. So it has the imprimatur of that quote of das body. Some of them are good, some of them are just as bad as the rest of us. But there is an imprimatur associated. I am now a little worried about these two dates. These are the dates I've been telling various committees, other dates. End of 2017. Beginning of 2018. Why did I pick those? For a couple of reasons. The next decadal study is in 2020. They're going to start doing their beginnings in about the end of 2018, maybe even the middle of 2018. The fact that we have some thinking going on in this field would be very useful for that other people, the other people in this business. But we are not really, we're going to be, we'll not get to that. It's be useful if something we have done will be an input to that. Not to make us go into that, but for the other people in this business of the user. And if you don't want to be that altruistic, but I don't know if we can manage it anymore. I mean, we'll see what's entailed. What's this NRC panel going to do? And well, that's the very last slide I'm going to talk to you about. So clearly, you want to talk about the full spectrum in front of that committee. You want to talk about things even that are in the astronomy, CMB, pulsar, all of these, space-based, all of that. But it's going to have its strongest emphasis on the ground base because it's not discussed anywhere else. Okay? And what you're going to have is you have both physics and astronomy representatives. These are going to be chosen by people in the academy in part, partly by us, okay? The scientists are not all to evaluate the importance of our science and then something about the technology and the cost. You can't avoid that. That has to be part of it. Some piece of reality besides just the science. The science is absolutely critical. It's the most important thing. But you can't just talk about the science without the implications for the rest of the program. So why an NRC panel? I just said that it has this authority of the NAS to convince Congress. And that's a very important thing for the people at the NSF to understand. The fact is that we will lobby with this report to our favorite congressmen and our favorite senators, just like anybody else does. Okay? And otherwise, it's the one probably best way that I know of to have a document that you can go to private donors with. And I don't want to recommend that that's the only press method, but if we get stuck, there are private donors now because of this tremendous disparity in income that actually can afford to think about doing something important in science. And we've done that for years. It's getting more and more likely. So that's why you need an NRC panel, not just a blue ribbon panel. That's important. I've been making that issue over and over again. So I talked over with various people in various committees. The committees that we talked to, and Vicky Calagaro and I have done this. We talked in front of the board on physics and astronomy. We did that before the discovery. They were lukewarm to this whole idea, but they didn't throw us out. Lately, we talked again to them, and they were very enthusiastic. Okay? That's after the discovery. And now the way this works is you have to get the agreement of the agencies that are responsible for the health of the field, not that necessarily they don't have to fund it, but they have to agree to it. One can probably think of ways of getting some funding from the agencies, that's NASA, and in this case, NASA and NSF, but also you can probably go after private donors for that. You're not, I don't think exhausting your ability to go, you know, to beg in front of them for this kind of a thing. It's somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million, I think, on this cost. Okay? So, what needs to be done? Well, this is what needs to be done is actually critical as far as I'm concerned. We have, I was hoping we could establish a charter for that panel in this meeting. That was my major reason. I don't think it's easy to do that in sort of a way. In the next 10 minutes, you're not going to get that. But you are going to, you could put a small group together, and I'll leave that to the people who have done this, to try to say, okay, try to assign people and say, look, you put a charter together, at least the beginning of it, how you would do this. How, what would be the charter for such a panel? And the important, most important thing, and I know people are working on this, they're not working on it as far as in a sufficiently organized way and with enough results yet. But the most important thing is you got to prepare a science case for successive sensitivities improvement by a factor of 3, indicating where the breakpoints are in the new facility. What I mean by that is you're not going to have a big discussion about, oh, let's use this kind of power recycling or this kind of amplitude recycling or this kind of filter or that. That's not the issue. The issue is you have to take the technology and take a pretty good guess what it might be and think, okay, let's see, how could you get factors of 3 improvements? And that's broadly defined. It doesn't have to be only in the bucket. It could be other places. You can say, I can prove the high frequency. But substantive places that you think of where the science changes significantly because you've made the technology improve, that's what you need. And you want to have, you don't want to do it all in one, well, big, one big step. You want to do it in steps of 3. If you don't like 3, pick 2. I don't care. I just picked 3 because it sounded right to me. Okay? And that's the most important single thing that should be done by a group that is put together here to continue doing this over the next, I would say, 6 months, no later than the result in 6 months, if you want to maintain the schedule. You also have to, in that particular thing, and maybe it's not the same group, but they're related, to indicate broadly what are the technological changes that you anticipate to get those steps. You have to at least show that. What are the ideas that you have? And unfortunately, and this is something we haven't done at all, is you have to have some idea what it might cost. It doesn't have to be a full study. Obviously, you can't do that. But it has to be, you know, is this an order of magnitude of about 10 million, 30 million, 100 million? That you have to know. Okay? So that's a big task, and we don't have it. Now, I want to, our last few slides are just for fun. And there is fun in this business. It's not fun. It's serious stuff. But I want to show you what happened to us in 1983. And what and this is literally, this is all, let me tell you what this is all about. What this is about is a committee that was like this one I'm proposing, or everybody really wants, I'm not proposing, but I'm pushing. Is that I'll tell you where we were. This is when you were relating the history of the project. There was a very important moment in the history of the project when things had gone Maury bound. In other words, we had assembled ourselves in 83, we tried to get this thing started, and what happened is by 86, things were not looking in any way progressively going anywhere. The National Science Board hadn't yet agreed. They said, give them some study money, but we're not going to go forward with it. And in the middle of all of that, Dick Garwin, that's him right there, a very famous physicist, who was a head of the IBM science establishment in New York and was, a professor at Columbia at the time. Zabi can correct me on that, writes a letter to the head of physics at MIT, Marcel Barden. And he says, look, and it turns out to be in the end, even though you may not like it, it's a friendly letter. It reads badly, but it's a friendly letter. Okay, it says, look, I'll read this to you. He says after, he hears that we're trying to push a new project costing around $100 million, maybe $200 million, but we didn't know that. And it says, if you're gonna go on with this, and he says he knows all about this sort of stuff, interferometry. I think it would be useful to have a 2-week summer study where people who are not involved in the experiments have a chance to contribute and to reduce the cost and to provide a wider community, which will inform and so forth and so on. And then the rest of the letters are about other private companies. So this is Dick Garwin saying to the NSF, after he had managed to really kill off Weber. Okay, this is what happened before this. Darwin was the guy who killed Weber. I have to say that he systematically went out and not that he did an experiment for the history of it all, but it was an experiment, a small experiment, which was not the same as what Joe did, but it had, he understood everything about it, and he felt, and he made himself known. He would go to meetings. Joe would sit on one end of the auditorium, and he would sit on the other end. I'd witness this over and over again, and they would shoot at each other. That's what it was. And it was awful. So, anyway.
So you loved it.
What?
You loved it.
I did not love it. No. No.
Not at all.
So what happened is that a committee was put together to look at this case. And now, here, you can't possibly read this. I'll tell you what's in it in a second. And here is the people who are on the committee. This is their final summary. You can get this when you look at the lecture if you want, or the talk I gave. And now here are the people. There is the guy who read it. That was Andy Sessler, who was a high energy physicist at Berkeley. He was an accelerator physicist, but a very sound and intelligent guy. He took this thing on, didn't know anything about it, but he thought it was interesting. And he then convinced that Boyce McDaniel, who was Wilson's sidekick to Bill Camulab. And these two guys took over and became chairs of this committee, which you can see the names of. And you'll see something. Here's where Stanford got into it. Dan DeBray was in this. He was one of the people called for because there was so much technology in it. Okay, and then Val Fitch, a Nobel Prize winner, who had gotten interested in physics a little bit. Dick Darwin was on the committee, and John Hall, who you probably know. These two guys have Nobel Prizes. Fitch had it before, and Jan had it after this committee. And his voice says, okay, Andy Sessler, Saul Tucholsky is the only guy really in the group who knew anything about this. Okay, and then Alvin Talisca is a high-energy physicist at Columbia. Now that group, when you read that thing, came up with the following. This is now, after all, we've been 3 years trying to get this damn thing going. And they, first of all, admit, they say right in their thing, don't screw around. Build two of them right away. Build them full length. Don't do any more prototyping, because the prototyping won't do you any good. Then all the new problems will happen when you build a big one. And then they say, and you ought to get rid of the flakes who are running it. That was the guy who now getting all these awards. Okay.
Thanks. Thank you, Ray. Thank you for.
You got a win.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
So. We have about 10 minutes, I guess. We can start the discussion, and then we have, as I said, an hour later on in the morning. Zavi.
So first of all, when I hear tears, plants, I just then I associate with famine, death, misery. I'm coming from the block where people died, so I don't know what to think about any of that. So I totally agree with the NRC on our. Yeah, so I think that's a very good idea to pursue that instead of the behavior survey.
Okay.
Yeah. So the second is, I would argue with David's statements that uniform instrumentation is only good. I think that should be at least good as a pro and con.
You can have genetic defects that propagate.
Exactly. So in a sense, it gives you fairly high confidence if you see the same signal with instruments developed by different teams, different technologies. So I think that can be listed and go to places. Yeah.
Thank you. Other comments? Ricardo?
Oh, and then Bob. I indicated that correctly, that people outside don't understand the emission of fields and not power, and that is actually some great advertising tool. Because if you think about optical astronomy from Saturn to the end of the universe, had to go through many, 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 many orders of magnitude of improvement and sensitivity. We had to go through those many and repeat a few more orders of magnitude in order to get a signal. However, we are already picking up something which is 10% out of distance to the edge of the universe or something compared with that. So one great advertisement that I found that hits people that say, oh, if we just improve factor of 10, we start listening to what happened at the very beginning. So this one is a very good selling point that I found there. So this should be stressed in this point. And a comment of history, I recognize the same style in Boyd when he was running Cornell when I was there. What keeps the problems later? But just for history.
I'm going to ask Bob a little bit back.
So thank you. I agree very much in spirit with what David and Ray said. I just wanted to add a couple of codes to that, perhaps. I think it's important for all of us to remember that this is like or not in the political process. And that we were going to be involved with many of the people who feel that what they're doing is just as interesting and just as fine as what we're doing. And that's to be expected. We just have to be ready for it. And I think we are. But the issue of who's interested in what they're doing and how much they're interested is really, really important. And right now, I won't need to remind people, this is an absolute high mark for survival. And we had a wonderful discovery, better than I think anybody anticipated. I would urge us not to neglect that this came about because of outstanding management, generally speaking, and wonderful technical accomplishments. Built on budget and on time, and I've been in science for a long time. I don't know many other large projects which I can make that statement. And I think it's really important not to write about it, but I don't want to shy away from it either. I think it is it's also very important to remember that if LIGO had come to NSF in 1990, 1988, asking for $1.1 billion. I think we've all been answered with that. And so what did work was a stage process in which LIGO moved and attributable to its science and specifications. Nobody expected that to happen. It overcame the objections of the astronomy community, which were very substantial at the time, and LIGO in a position of real strength. But you can't take that lead all at once, is the point I'm trying to make. And so I think actually you have already outlined that you get involved now here in a staged approach. You first of all get LIGO to its advanced LIGO specifications. And you build A+, you build Voyager, and that process will develop the technologies you need for going to the Cosmic Explorer. And that's a staged process that could work, and I think the agencies would be probably more receptive to it. So that's maybe enough about that. The last thing I'd say is I understand the desire to have the MRC study. I think in principle it is a really good idea. But I think it occurred to me last night that the technical matter, I'm not sure that the MRC has it somehow. I don't know that they will take money from in order to do what we want to do. Even though we're proposing an independent study and all that. The reason that the National Academy process works as well as it does is because Congress thinks, rightly or wrongly, that it's an independent, unbiased source of good judgment. And that's really the reason why it has been pretty premature in the budget. Thank you.
Matt, you have
something to say?
Yeah.
Ray, on the previous slide, the what is to be done slide, the section on building scientific base. I have a question about that. Is it? I mean, it seems like if our community build a scientific case kind of as such, rather than draw on essentially a series of papers that were peer reviewed, written, peer reviewed, read, and cited over some number of years. And so I wonder whether the rush to get this done in the time scale you mentioned would actually make the scientific case a little dodgier looking. It doesn't have that whole kind of, the timescale that's associated with that publication process.
I mean, I don't have a sharp answer. I'm worried about the schedule for the whole thing, I mean, to be honest with you. But there's what I think is worth capitalizing on is just the fact that we practice this code and it's now on the public mode.
You gotta
figure out how to best use it. And that's the, it's kind of, you can't, you couldn't wait. I think you're talking about a factor of a year or a half a year. I don't think, if you're talking about 5 years from now, that's crazy. You don't wait that. You look at how long it takes to get something like this built. I mean, just look at the talk that Dave did. You know, I mean, for 25 years, from 83 to 94, at least you can get the thing green, you know? You don't want to. And that's to me the driver.
Dave, can you can you clarify exactly what that purpose of that kind of document, how big it is going to be?
I don't know. That's
what I mean. Is that something that we need to first understand? What is the purpose of anything like this? Board of leaders. What are we trying? I mean, I think you said what we are trying to sell. That's okay. But how detailed should we be and how it should be backed up by more detailed stuff?
Okay.
In the case of visa, what we're trying to do is to have two different means to analyze almost every statement that is made. Completely different. To analyze that sort of thing takes longer. But if you are thinking about, okay, there is wisdom in the literature, let's put together all of that in a point of emphasizing what you're saying. That's a different answer.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, let me try to answer part of it. I don't know all the answers, obviously. I mean, you're asking some hard questions. I mean, the thing is that, and the major driver is the fact that there is no agency of all the things that are going on in the scientific community right now that actually look at this. And the one part that could do it is the cable and astronomy. And that's the very last place I feel that you want to get mixed up. That's part of what, and I said to myself, where is the Brinkman thing? Where are the physicists? And we can make a few of them. We can argue about it. And all this thing we argue about relative to other things that we want to spend their money on. Now, I think we have a pretty good case we could make to follow. People ask me this all the time. Look, now you've made the study, where is this heading? Can you show us a vision? And that's the vision, that statement that sounds good. The question then is, can you put some substance behind that in terms of the technology? Not that you have to solve it entirely, but the technology that is needed to make that vision work. Okay? I think we can do some of that. And so you guys did that in the onset. Doesn't have to be absolutely on the mark, no. Doesn't have to be, so it's ironclad and people can refer to it as a textbook. I don't believe that. You want to be able to use that document, both with Congress if you want, if you feel that you need to get them in outside of the document, which I think is a very effective thing to do.
But it can be a living thing, right?
Of course
it can be a living thing.
But you have a group of people who are not us, who have looked at this. And you can't reassemble them over and over. See, look, what is the case? Here's how the decadal works. I was just on a committee from the decadal, something called the mid-decadal now. And this is one of the reasons why it's sometimes agencies resist this, because what happens is this. Let me give you a little history of LISA. Any of you know that. What happened is that in 2010, there were three big things that were pulled together by that very large committee. That was the decadal. Some of you were on that committee. Were you on that?
I'm not on the committee.
Okay. And what happened is that, sure, they did W first was one of them, then the Explorer program was the second most important. And the third most important thing was LISA as a big project. What happened is 2 years later, they killed LISA. Now, Mid-Decadal has looked at that. They have made some comments, which I'm not free to make because the report isn't out. But I can tell you they said, look, try to restore what it was back in 2010. That's what they're going to say, if everything sticks together, and with some reasons for it. And the thing is that process, once every 5 years, something like that could happen. You could have another committee 5 years later, looking at the validity of that NRC panel with the new information that's come from the vastly much new data that's come out, hopefully come out of it. And Virgo, and I hope LIGO and Virgo are different together. So, I can't tell you exactly how to write it. That's what I want something to do, of our group. But you can pretty much guess with what we now know, and with the kinds of things that you think you can do, what the progression will be. For example, making the argument for even the things that are being said, add a LIGO, an 8x plus.
needs some argument, but Voyager needs a bigger argument. Why? Because it's a bigger bus. And you need a very big argument to even get an engineering study here. So you can do a real study. Look, and I don't like that. I mean, I'm sorry that I'm going to say this, but I've read that Einstein proposal. I mean, that big yellow book. And it's not what I would consider a thing that would pass muster in the United States in terms of making the project or a proposal. It's not a proposal. It's a study.
Right, correct. It's a consumption of the non study.
Barely that. Because it doesn't have cost, it doesn't have real schedules. And so it's a science piece, speedy in the end. And I think something a little better than that, but not a hell of a lot. And I think there's some urgency to it. So it's something we have to take seriously. Now, I'll tell you why I think we got behind it here, right? Because we were building a fast up. I mean, I'm not saying that nothing was done.
No, I'm just saying,
yeah.
No, but so, I wanted to ask just one final question.
We have an hour afterwards.
Okay, good. Thanks, Josh.
That's a hard question.
Yes. Yeah. Last comment in that meeting with lawyers.
I guess this is really for me again, but Lisa presented so well in our review and a month of Chinese interest, also implying Lisa, do you think we should try to sell the field as a whole, ground based and space based together, and try to avoid competition?
I think that's a hard question also. But some people have asked me, would us doing a big study for a thing that's $1 billion, would that injure the reason? I don't think it will. Because you can show that there are really quite different science that gets done. You have to point that out. I mean, for example, many people outside of our society, out of our group, think, oh, well, gravitational waves have now been discovered. We don't need to do research. I mean, that's the thing. They have to show that there is a whole spectrum that's associated with this field. That's very important for people to understand. And the other thing is that, so I don't think, when you have a study in the NRC like this, you clearly have to talk about all the three branches that main emphasis to be on ground, because Lisa is going to get a hell of a lot of attention in the 2020 decade. Don't worry about it. That's quite my job. Keep it on schedule. Keep that going.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue. I don't want to stay on schedule. I had asked, as I mentioned earlier, when he was going to give us some history of ET.
Yeah. Albert asked me to present a talk about what we learn thanks to the ET design study. And so I try to follow completely the suggestion, and I present a few aspects of the design study, a bit of history, and what could be useful to extract for a possible worldwide collaboration on third generation infrastructure. So then the first thing I have to learn how to go on the next. So this is the laser and the next page is. Sorry? Yeah, I didn't go there. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, first of all, the Einstein telescope, I want to make a bit of history because the history is useful to understand how it developed. And the history is long of the Einstein telescope project. And it started in 2004 with a project that was not related absolutely to gravitational waves, or that the gravitational waves was a very small fraction. Because it was a project of underground physics, the Gran Sasso Laboratory, so Astrofarco. And we inserted in this European founded project just to discuss the future of gravitational wave research in Europe. So we decided to have a small team that was discussing about how to evolve from Virgo and Geo to something more performant. So it was addressed to the initial detectors. But we started, thanks also to the collaboration with Harald, we started to discuss, try to have a longer view and to see if we can start to think on 3G. And we submitted a proposal at the same time in Europe for a project for the future that was, let me say, a bit confusing. Was mixing up interferometric technology and resonant bars, because at that time resonant bar was the operating detectors in Europe. And of course, this project has been rejected. But it was a good lesson, because we learned something on that. And what we learned is that we needed to focus in a clear project. And in the workshop that we had in Perugia in 2005, we agreed that if we make a new proposal, it should be focused on interferometric detector. And that was a good idea, because it worked. And what we can learn from this comment that it's quite important to talk each other and to have a good networking infrastructure. So this networking infrastructure should not be a forum, should be organized. And so when we say, oh, we need to talk together, we have GW-DW meetings. I don't believe that GW-DW meetings is the right place to discuss about that. It's the right place to discuss about technology, good ideas, and so on. But you need something more structural. You need to give milestone and the little ones to be efficient in the discussion. But in any case, network is important. So we proposed the Einstein telescope design for a third generation detector. So we introduced the concept of third generation detector at the time in 2007. And we have been supported by the European Commission for 3 years from 2008 to 2011 with 3 million of euro. That was mainly for a design, a conceptual design. And the constraint, there were some constraints where we applied for a grant, the grant is arrived, but there were constraints. And the constraints were that we had to study what is called the research infrastructure. Okay. There is a specific definition of research infrastructure in the European documents. It's an infrastructure that produces data, and this data is available to the rest of the world. So this is a concept of open access. And there is another concept that is you can access also the infrastructure. So you can support people that are coming. So with this idea of an observatory, we started to make the design. And what you can see that there is a clear effect of the constraint, that we focus not on the detector and not so much on the technologies, but we focus on the infrastructure. So in the idea of what we wanted to realize, an observatory that has some particular characteristics. And the last comment, it seems not related, why it is capable to work alone. That was constrained even by the time. Because at that time, the only place where people were talking about 3G was in Europe. And so the concept of one single installation in Europe that was related just to the time. So, sorry, I wrote in red to make more clear the keywords, but red is not this color, this projector. So the keywords for this design was observatory. So it needs to be beyond a simple detector. Focus on the physics, on the capability to estimate the physical parameters. So that was one of the crucial milestone keyword for the third generation. Capable to solve alone, again, alone, because that was the only one present project present in the world, depolarization. Oh, this comment I added after the discussion yesterday. I think in the discussion of yesterday, we missed something very crucial. So, we had incredible impact making a discovery that is a strong confirmation of the general relativity. But let's suppose that we detected an extrapolarization. Okay? And how to detect an extrapolarization? Network. So the discussion yesterday lost this key important point that networking is useful for that, for example. if you discover an extra polarization. And if you discover an extra polarization, you have to modify the general relativity. And then maybe you can start to talk of dark matter, dark energy, also thanks to the fact that you modify the general relativity. So this is a very simple message that could enter in what we saw today, that there is the unknown is still present in our research. So another keyword of the Einstein telescope was the ideal example, and this is the idea of redundancy to have more than one detector inside. So another subject that is not related to what we discussed yesterday, why frequency bridging? Yesterday we I see a lot of focus on what is the priority, low frequency, high frequency. In reality, from a conservatory, we need to point to everything because we don't know really. We detected the codes, but we don't know the rest. So we need to be open and we need to think at something that is very wide range. And this is the reason why I pushed a lot for low frequency sensibility in ET. And also another keyword is the fact that we want to realize something that is will be operative for several things. Okay, another keyword that was of course the project was European because it was founded by the European Commission, but really since the beginning we had the precise intention to make it international. And for this reason, we realized what is called the science team. In the team, there was a science team. And we forced a lot the budget rules of Europe, allowing to pay people that were not belonging to the project. And we supported the people from the US, from Australia, from Russia, to collaborate to the project. It's been quite risky for a financial point of view, but it worked. From all what I say to you, we learn the second lesson that you need a clear mandate. The mandate was given by the European space to realize a design for SS infrastructure, but that was useful because it addressed our interest. Constraint, of course, should be as few as possible, but clear and well defined. And we needed to agree the target since the beginning. That was not clear in the first proposal that we made that was failed. Okay, that was just this is just a small test I made the day before to leave from Italy. And I made a simple search in the archive, just looking in this period, so since the beginning of the project until last year, about the articles that are in the archive, that aid in the abstract, the word gravitational waves and LIGO, VIGO, and telescope, GCA. And you see that a small project, like it did with 3 million of funding for only 3 years, was the fund handled in 2011. In any case, it's not so bad. The hit is not so bad on this using this parameter with respect to the giants like LIGO and LIGO. And this, I think, is an effect of the fact that we have been as open as possible since the beginning. People started to interest. We introduced a new concept, the third generation, and people started to be interested in it. Okay, so we go in the most boring part of the book, is organization. So how the science time was organized? It was organized into the management, was realized into bodies. What is called the governing council, that was the intention, the original idea was that the council is composed by the representative of the funding agencies, funding not for the project, because the funding agencies are the project of Europe, but the funding agencies of the partners of this project. And the executive board that was doing the real job, and so me and the other person taking care of the technical aspect. We are also Jochen, Sir, Julio, and Andreas Weiser, and and that was the idea, and let me say, this part of the project worked very well because we were strongly interested in the project.
this part was not really working for a mistake. Because at the end, the funding agencies appointed for this role more or less the scientists that were involved in it. And that was not the original idea. The idea is to have a real link the funding agents inside the project. And I think this field, this part was not really well performed. It's my personal opinion. Okay, so the fourth lesson that we can learn is in the organizational links. It's crucial to have the team or structure. It's important to keep links toward the institutions. So this is the lesson. Now, how we can apply this lesson to what we are discussing today? And this is a very personal idea. Let's see. So what we have in the table? We have the WIC. And that is the group made a subcommittee that should study the future of terrestrial detectors. We have the WAC, that is composed by the funding agencies in gravitational waves. We have the science team, that is the gravitational wave community. And then what we have? If you want to make a proposal or an idea of collaboration of third generation, at the end we need to rely on something like that. We need to rely on a team that is managed, that takes care of the science case, that takes care of the site, the technical network, the research infrastructure, and the technology. Maybe something else that is not important here. So you have the project, but you have all of that bodies. I think that we need to find a way that these bodies are collaborating. In this design, the WIC subcommittee is the place where the contact with the science team is taken. The contact with the research institution, the funding institution is kept, and is something connected in some way connected with the team. And in fact, you see the color of the arrow is different. To remind me to say that. This committee could be partially overlapped with the management. Okay, so all that, what is the could be the timing? This is a roadmap. This is what has been presented, for example, at the last ASPERA meeting. 5 minutes, this is the almost last one. So this has been presented at the last APEC meeting, that is the meeting of funding agencies. In Europe for last of us. So the total roadmap of we know will show up in the gravitational wave research in the next let's say 15 years. And so we have the evolution of especially evolution of Lanza Virgo, the evolution of LIGO and LISA. And this is what about what we know about T. About the T, what we know that we need an R&D in the next years. So we need to refine the design because it is a bit old and it was made with constraints that are any more valid. So 3G is not forbidden now, for example, in the US. And so we need to restore the growth of that. So we need to separate but also develop the design for the detector. This is for infrastructure of the detector. And of course, it will be the long path to find money and to start the construction. The idea is to have it operative at the end of the next year, of course. So you can see here that are these two starts. What are these two starts? There are crucial windows for us. Is the ESPI roadmap. ESPI is the roadmap of the European research infrastructure. So it's a roadmap that keeps all the major research infrastructure to be realized in the next 10 years in EU. And our idea is to enter in these roadmaps. And there are two windows, one in the next year in 2018 and one in 2020. And if you see this roadmap, roadmap has this box that overlaps these two possible windows, because the original idea is to try to enter in 2020. Okay? That was the science. Then we have been in Basel weeks ago, and they strongly suggested us to apply for the first. because they say you have momentum, apply now. The day after, on Monday, Tuesday, I go to the Italian Ministry for Research, and completely independently, they say apply to the first one. Okay? Then in the same week, we have Brexit, I don't know what happens. I don't know. Completely, I don't know. So, but in any case, this final slide, if we want to be in this roadmap, we need to start soon, to start with the design that is so well defined, but something that has inside a flavor of the cost and an idea of what we want to do. Yes.
Thank you.
I guess it's clear that the project explorer process is somewhat behind the students and the other path of the program. I guess it's been the next step is actually the program to write such a project. So, possibly even anything else to write that program. Or a proposal for the other stage. Do you have any recommendations on how long goes about getting that started? How that process happen? What do you write in the proposal for such?
The proposal for the proposal.
Exactly. It's something which can be educated or almost content free. It depends on your imagination. So, what in your experience, what goes in that proposal?
Okay. I mean, for it, yeah, you're quite well defined because you know the standard, you have the definition. So, it depends. The proposal to be moved to somebody. I don't know who is your somebody. And also depends on the constraint that they do. But what is important in certain sites is the certification. The feasibility. Because the way is a concept of design, so the target is to do the feasibility. But you should at least show that it's not a crisis competition. We are starting to follow very, very solid. I did an international validation. So what we did, we clearly think is applying something that is European, but we are in an international level. Then maybe you should not copy what we did, hopefully because the time has changed, and maybe we should find a common form that we apply to the LSF, and we apply on our European maybe from what I understood from Ray, the time is similar.
Michele, if I can add a question to that one. I think that the million writers came with R&D for some groups.
R&D was strongly discouraged.
Strongly. That is a concept of design. And they say, okay, if you need the for prototyping, okay. But the main part is for design of something. In fact, we spent, I think, 20% of the R&D, and the rest for person and for travels.
How many people were involved? You mentioned a large number, but how many actually came?
Well, what means involved? Okay, we paid the new person, I don't know, what the order of 15 or something like that, new person. And a large fraction was for organizing meetings and what is called the secondments in European jargon means that you move some value to somebody, you know, to move the place. And so to collaborate, that was the main target.
I have a question. You clearly are marching to a time scale that's set by the EC and the EU here. As Matt said, we're delayed. When we get our act together, can you restructure what you're doing to match more closely an international collaborative effort, or are you casting concrete
so,
by virtue of what
we've brought? For us, the strongest thing are these two stars. So the first one, we will, against my original opinion, I think we will try to apply it. Because I think we are not ready. This is my personal idea. But we will learn how to apply to the second one. Okay? That is, of course, that is a fixed constraint.
But all the rest we can try.
Okay. Any other questions?
Maybe a comment. I think there's also a mode to apply where you get selected in 2018 to make the final application. And I think also the timeline for this to get on this move at least 3 countries that have been there that they support also financial. So this is, and this actually is where you want to catch up.
Yeah, that's a good one. So when you say 2 countries, 2 governments, not distributions, 2 governments. That is a good point.
One difference between your thought and me thought is that Dave was making this 3G contingent on a month slide between the time sensitivity you never mentioned. We were advancing and that is because the agency, the funding agency that we
so is a more complex situation here because you are playing on different tables. Of course, our funding agency asked us, Virgo should arrive, should work and then should arrive at the nominal selection, of course. But the timing, for proposals is dictated by Europe. So what we needed to do for us is push up to enter. When you enter in the roadmap, you have first a good label that is spent in distribution. But the second, you have access to all the funds by the European Commission for all the for part of the developments. And so meanwhile, people is working with the 2G and 2G plus. With efforts, we are preparing the field of the transformation. If we wait to arrive at the nominal sensitivity with the detectors, current detectors, it will be too late because the speed is here is quite slow, too late to be at the 2030 ready with the new
platform. Yeah, but that's exactly my point because if we advance LIGO, I understand why that was true. In the process of going from initial LIGO to advanced LIGO. In this case, our observing plans are very long. Like we've spent years without really working on this sensitivity. So I'm actually questioning this constraint of reaching 92.
Let's, well, can I comment on that? Or is she asking me a question?
I'll be back.
Yeah, I think the issue is we need to be able to convince the agency. Let me say, if I were I look at this from sitting on the other side of the table. If I were going to write a check or we'd ask for a new proposal that's going to ask for $1.5 billion, I would want to be convinced that the team that's proposing it has the capability to do it. And the best way that I would be able to do that would be to say they understand that this is a way to tackle it. Maybe they haven't even gotten science, but they know where the problems are. So, the money that's going to show up for any big project like Cosmic Explorer isn't going to show up in the next 5 years. I think you have to start building the case. But it's not going to do construction, it's not going to happen in 2020. I mean, if we raise a statement, and I think we do, that we want to do something that's 2017 and 2018. By 2020 or 2021, I think we'll know pretty well where we are with the next cycle. So I don't see an issue there. But I do believe, again, in the government, and then it's maybe more important to do some process, the thing that has to happen is what we need to do. You know, we know what we're doing, we know what we're doing. I mean, that's the basis of that statement.
Yes, I totally agree with you, but I think that the question is different. Do you have to wait until 2019 or until you reach the census to start the design process?
No.
Then we can coordinate with them. Okay. I have no problem saying it. I'm trying to get the money. I don't have it, but I can write it.
But for construction?
There's no conflict.
Also for us. We can't start construction.
We need to measure.
Because from your later meeting with the Brussels, did you get any further feedback to build a product to identify the source of money that you will use in the next few proposals?
What do you mean? The money for the construction?
Yeah.
it's a long process. As I also said during the meeting, that there will be need of national funds, but also of structural funds, so the funds that are coming from Europe to the local governments. And so this is something that we need to collaborate.
I remember that Member Hensley said once I typed it up, and to be sure that the board didn't start on the plan when they're based on the Jackson Fund. Do you think that's managed again?
There are. Mike?
Yeah, it is a huge tool if you want to be on the SP board, then so it's important to be there and get up the rest of the week. Even if you compare all of that, and even with the levels, still they need more companies to be through the same process to develop in grants to different places in order to finally then get the funding system together to get the global.
Yeah, what does it mean? That don't mean that the money are on the table. Is the government that takes the responsibility to say, okay, we'll try to fund that.
So is this process going on in Italy and France?
We started, as I said, they have been in the Italian ministry, and they suggested to apply for that. When they suggested, they say, okay, folks. INFN started to be interested. I mean, interested means to support the proposal, but it's a long path. So Hungary is interested, strongly interested.
I'm not sure if people in the US realize from Mexico that they don't have any sense.
Yeah.
As people don't have a patient, as we have another patient, and each other. And so to get funding will be like, unless we find a great solution, would be that.
If I may, I just want to make a couple of comments on Ray's request for an academy report, which I support. But you didn't mention the role that the academy study played in advance writing. It was nothing particularly on advanced writing, but it was in parts to the cosmos study. And there was a strong statement in there that NSF staff, in principle, could have used and did in Harvard with them. So even play a role in the game. And then I happen to be on the U.S. Liaison Committee to UCA, and the Academy comes and makes a report. What I'm doing for the Starling Committee makes a report for that week. And the design study that you talked about is listed. It was a lineup of the UNAP report. And it was described as a community driven study.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to
are you planning that repurposing of CERN and using the CERN quantum mechanism and CERN and study infrastructure would make it easier?
Yeah, that's a scheme that's a good one. So, you know, you should have 10% of the sun reject.
We need to find a black hole to insert so we can use also.
Well, thank you. We can be at 10:30.